Welcome to Real Estate Radio Live, an informative and engaging podcast discussing everything you need to know about the world of real estate. Your host, Joe Cacera, provides you with insight and guidance on how to buy, sell, finance, and invest in real estate. He also offers real estate tax management strategies, new construction advice, home improvement tips, and much, much more. And now, to guide you around the world of real estate, here's your host and Real Estate Radio Live team leader, Joe Cacera.
Welcome in, Joe Cacera with Real Estate Radio Live. Thank you for those that continue to follow us on Facebook. We appreciate that very much. We want to try to do the shows Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, again, just for the benefit of the people that are checking in, watching. It's not always the case. We try to stick to that. For more information, you can always go to reradiolive.com. We have the studio here. We like to do the broadcast and the show here so that we get additional exposure via social media on Facebook as we are. But it's a podcast, so once we develop the show, we do the show here, then it becomes the podcast, which gets distributed all over the place. So if you have not yet downloaded the podcast, please do me a favor and do so. You go anywhere online and just type in Real Estate Radio Live, and likely it'll come up with iTunes or Stitcher or the website or any way you can download the podcast to any of those places. It is Wednesday, so if everything goes well and everybody's in town and Mike and I aren't ditching out trying to do something, we are here.
Golfing.
So, golfing, another thing.
Exactly.
Two Italian guys talking real estate, that's what we're going to do today.
Hey, happy birthday.
Yeah,
there.
Thank you.
Yeah, how was it?
Thank you,
it was
good.
I forgot to ask you before we went on the
really
air.
Really good. Yesterday, yeah. I got, it was a good birthday. We had a lot of good stuff last weekend and have some more stuff coming in this weekend.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It's like a month-long celebration over here.
I'd like to take it longer. I'm milking it as much as I can, no, but I appreciate that. So what we're going to talk about today is two things. We're going to break it up. First, a little bit about student loan education. The number is staggering. And it's.
Yeah.
I think it's 20-plus million. There's a lot of people coming out of college at all ages entering the workforce laden with some kind of student debt. Now, it's never been higher. Matter of fact, I think it's about ready, if it's not already surpassed. If you can imagine, Mike, right now, I think the total student loan debt now has surpassed total mortgage debt in the United States.
Wow. Really?
That's pretty, it's amazing, isn't it? It's
that's
pretty
nuts.
Close.
Yeah.
If it hasn't,
I'm
it's
sure
really close.
Yeah.
So if you could imagine, if that's kind of a number to think about.
Good Lord.
So it's either near or surpassed the amount of mortgage liability that's taken out of the United States. And so the good news is you have millions and millions of young adults and people of all ages that are coming out of college, and they're educated, going to go into the workforce, which is great, and they have great, bright careers ahead of them. The challenging news is that you might come into the workforce and start your first job, Mike, and have anywhere from $50,000 to $300,000 in student debt, right?
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a few careers out there that have special loans, like doctors and lawyers, because the income potential, the banks know, is good, and therefore they can pay back their debt from college. And usually those careers have the highest debt, i.e. doctor or lawyer. And so, anyways, that's one of them that maybe there's a special loan program for out there.
Yeah, so really the objective of this show, the first half we're going to talk about, just sort of review, and the message for us today, to those that are listening, and please do me a favor, I always say this, pass this along to people that you think it might apply to. And so the message today is really to educate yourself. If you have student debt, don't automatically think that you can't qualify for a loan, you can't purchase a home. I know first-time home buyers are always concerned about it. I hear it all the time. But the message is today, you'd be surprised, because of some of the parameters around student loans and what the payments look like, the minimum payments, and how you qualify, you'd be surprised that a lot of people could purchase, be first-time home buyers with those student loans. And I think a lot of people sometimes automatically think, gee, I have $100,000, $150,000 of debt, Mike, and I don't even want to check because, I don't think I could qualify.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, they use that as a part of the qualification, would they not? I mean, as against their debt-to-income ratio.
They do.
And it might hinder the actual mortgage amount that you qualify for, but overall, you can still qualify,
Yeah, and so, again, there's student loans are all a little bit different, but let me just kind of explain how we look at as a lender, as an investor, when you're lending to someone. Student loans kind of fall into two categories, kind of. There's some more, but primarily two. One is you know, you look at the minimum payment, and a lot of times still the minimum payment's pretty low. Another thing that to look at is a lot of the student loans, we don't hit them for a payment, or they don't have to start paying until a certain date.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. Let's say you graduated in 2019, and they say, okay, your first payments aren't due until 2021 or 22 or
sure.
whatever. So you got to really understand what's going on with the student loans and what kind of student loans you have. And as we always say, we talk about this all the time on this show, just educate yourself and inform yourself. Don't automatically assume. The other thing, and this sounds funny, but you know, the worst thing you could do sometimes is listen to your family, friends, neighbors. I hate to say that because some people, hey, what do you mean? But it's true because it's a weird dynamic. Sometimes, I know this is going to sound weird, but a lot of people will automatically just think they know everything, so they'll spout something out and talk right out of you-know-what,
mm-hmm.
and without even knowing, right? It happens.
Oh,
you ever
yeah.
heard that happen?
No, I never heard of that.
Anyway, so be careful of that. And, of course, you know, it doesn't mean that you're going to get bad information from people that are close to you, your family and friends, but a lot of people will misinterpret or they'll misunderstand. And let's face it, the best thing any of us could do, it's great to get advice, it's great to get consultation, but do your own research and really look into these things yourself because it's going to affect them individually.
You know what would be kind of cool is if there was a mortgage you could get that would help you pay off?
They're working on that. It's a great idea.
Yeah.
They are. Part of the provision
debt,
is,
yeah. And then get the mortgage, you know,
no,
at the same time.
No, there's actually
kind
some,
of like an 80-10-10
yeah,
loan, but a little
right.
bit different. Yeah.
No, there are programs that lenders and investors are looking at. The purpose is to look at that same type of activity.
Yeah.
Look at your student debt and say, how could we roll this in or finance as part
yeah.
of the program?
Yeah, because they do it with credit card debt. So,
they do.
So why not the student
Well, and
debt?
Some people do actually. Well, if you so like with refinance, a lot of people do refinance, pull
oh, yeah.
cash out
pull
of their house,
pay,
believe
yeah.
it or not, to pay off.
Yeah.
But I think what you're talking about is, let's say you're a first-time home buyer and you have $100,000 worth of student debt.
Yeah.
There are some lenders and some investors that are looking at programs that say, okay, let's look at that $100,000, and is there a way we could roll that in or finance part of that or make that part of the equation when we finance this for them
yeah.
purchase?
Yeah, that makes sense. Or, like you said, the cash out and just pay that off and,
yeah.
you know, pay less interest. Most
right.
likely you're going to pay less interest, I bet, than the student loan amount.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the other thing I want to say before those that are out there that have student debt, I mean, a lot of people are, and again, I get it, just this credit. It's a funny thing. You know, credit's a very sensitive thing. People are concerned. A lot of times people hold off and they don't even want conversations because they have maybe had some credit issues or made a couple late payments. Let me just say, too, while we're talking about this, don't be embarrassed by that stuff. Everybody has incidents. I don't care who you are, since mm-hmm. say everybody, but majority of population at one time in their life has some kind of credit challenges or issues that come up with medical, financial,
sure.
you lose
yeah.
a job. I mean, all kinds of things come up. So don't feel embarrassed when something happens. The main thing is to get the kind of information to do to correct that. And the reason I bring this up is because a lot of people automatically assume they're embarrassed by the fact that they have $100,000, $200,000 of student debt. Don't be embarrassed by it. Hopefully you got a great education, you got off to a great start in your career, and those are all good things. It's an investment in your life and your career. But the thing to watch out is that the other thing, Mike, is we're seeing, you know, years ago, student loans used to be ridiculously, in a great way, super great terms. Like you would at least see 1 and 2% interest rates. You know, I mean, really,
yeah.
it's not the case anymore, which is sad.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these lenders, governments, they got into this program where, you know, the economy's better, things are better. So, of course, what happens? So now the average student loans are like 6, 7, 8%.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not great anymore.
Yeah.
It used to be great.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm saying. Even if you refi and
yeah.
get money at a 3 or 4%,
right.
pay off the student loan, and then, you know, you have to qualify first, though, to get
you
that.
You do have to qualify.
So
that is a good idea. The other thing I was going to bring up before we switch gears a little bit on the student loans, whether you're ready to buy or not, or you're going to consider that, a lot of people don't know that you could refinance student debt with another lender or investor,
yeah.
right? So you could go to, typically where you get this is like a First Republic Bank, community banks, local banks. A lot of them really handle, there's even some places online that specifically are geared towards student loans. And what they do is, they similar to credit card debt, they'll look at, okay, you got 3-4 different student loans, all these different interest rates. I'll tell you what, we'll consolidate all of them, lower, and they'll look at to see if they could actually lower your rate and get improve the terms for you.
Yeah. Well, that's always a good thing, too.
Yeah. So that's something to really look at, too, in preparation for buying a home. Do that. And the message we want to do as we kind of switch gears here again, the last message I would like to, unless Mike has anything to say as well, is don't just assume that because you have student loans that you can't qualify to purchase a home. And, again, especially if you have someone else, maybe you're engaged, maybe a parent, maybe an aunt, maybe an uncle, maybe someone wants to help qualify. Keep those things in mind, too. There's some very creative ways. Mike and I have gone through the different creative ways to finance and buy sometimes. It's the same applies to student loan. Just because you have a liability is a liability, whether it's a credit card, a student loan, an auto loan. So don't be embarrassed by it. See if you can make some kind of provisions, and maybe you could bring someone in to help you.
You know what they say, Joe, when you assume.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
That's all I have to add.
That's all I have to add. So, big deal. Give us a call. Check in. It's the best thing to do. You could refinance student debt. You could purchase with it. Believe it. We do it all the time. Especially, you know, there's even provisions. I've seen this, too. I've seen employees, depending on what level you are at the company, go to their employers and say, hey, listen, mm-hmm. I'm getting ready to purchase.
Yeah.
And sometimes they work with them. When I say that is they work with them credit, or they may even do some things with their student loans. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of
yeah,
different opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So for more information on student loans, check in, give us a call. Even on the real estate side, right, if you're figuring out, gosh, can I really do this, check in with someone like Mike. Sit down, work up the numbers, figure out what you could do, what you can do. But the bottom line is, no matter what you do, if you're thinking about purchasing, you always want to start looking at your finances first and see what you could qualify for. The worst thing you could do is just start looking, and I think this is a mistake a lot of people make, is they start getting online, which is great, and they get all excited. They're going, I think I want to do this. I think I can do this. And you never know. So just get pre-approved before you have any kind of aspirations of buying a home, because that's the first step. All right. Anything else on student loans?
No. You're the man on that.
Let's get them done. You got any student loans, Kyle? You thinking about paying off? Or you haven't even got there yet, right?
Yeah.
Godspeed.
Kyle, our guy that works our gentleman that works our program here, does our podcast, and he's got all kinds of options coming with education, right? Just getting started. Hopefully he learned something from this. All right. So let's switch gears a little bit. I know Mike's just had a meeting, and been meeting with a lot of the 1031s. 1031 exchange, just to refresh everyone's memory, that is, you know, refers to an exchange for a property. You buy a property, whether it's residential, we'll talk about residential, commercial too if you want, Mike, but the whole idea is that to offset taxes, if you sell your rental property and you take that, those funds, those proceeds, then you could either buy up or buy down or buy several more or whatever you do. The whole idea is you use those proceeds for the next purchase or transaction so that you don't get taxed on those.
Yeah, so no, it's I did a little seminar. We had a tight-knit group today, and uh-huh. Ron Ricard with IPX 1031.
He's good.
He's awesome. You've probably had him on the show.
Yep.
And he's just a wealth of knowledge, and you know, he's well-known around the Bay Area within the real estate community as the go-to guy. He does speeches and seminars. So anyways, you got to look him up. I can connect you with them if you have questions on 1031. So we had a get-together today, and it was just fresh on my mind, so I figured we'd talk about it. And, yeah, so 1031, obviously, it's a tax deferral strategy. It's not a tax avoidance strategy. So what you do is it's on an investment property. If you sell an investment property, you then transfer the funds to this intermediary, which is the 1031 company, and then when you close, you have 45 days to identify up to mm-hmm. three replacement properties, however many, and then you have 180 days to close on it, and then the capital gains taxes you would have otherwise paid on your investment property gets deferred until mm-hmm. you die, basically. Okay. Or if your kids inherit the property, they get to step up in basis, and it's still deferred.
Yeah.
One of the things I just thought was really, really pertinent to this region and this area is the idea of if on your own personal residence, mm-hmm. you can use this program. Mm. And so how you can do that is, obviously, when you sell your personal residence, you have capital gains.
Right.
You get the exclusion. You know, the exclusion, if you're single, it's $250,000, and if you're married, the wife gets $500,000, right? So you have that. But then oftentimes people in this area have bought their home for, let's say, $100,000, and now they live, you know, they're in Palo Alto, and now their house is worth $3 million. Yeah. Well, when they wrote the capital gains tax law, you know, $500,000 at the time was a lot.
Yeah.
Well, it's not anything anymore. I mean, it's something, but it's not a big as big of a deal anymore, because values, especially in this region or other parts of the country, are really have appreciated a tremendous amount. So oftentimes people have, on top of that $500,000, they have like another $2-4 million gain that they're going to have to pay taxes on. So how do you avoid that? Or maybe avoid the wrong, maybe defer that, right?
Yeah.
So one of the ways is to move out of your home. So let's say you own a home here and then you want to move to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
So you move out of it, you rent it for 2 years, because then it becomes an investment property. Then you sell it, then you get the pocket $500,000, and then you get the 1031, the remainder, and buy investment property.
Really?
Yeah.
So take me through that again. So it's a primary residence, and let's say you have $1 million of, you know,
gain. Yeah.
And so then if you convert it to a rental property.
Correct.
Then you could take the $500,000? How does that work?
You get the $500,000 exclusion.
Okay.
Then you can exchange the additional
$500,000
into investment.
Okay,
or
good.
Whatever. That was pretty cool. Something that came out today and I thought, you know, people could benefit from.
Right.
So I love that strategy. The other thing I wanted to touch on was, similarly, a lot of, let's just say it's a rental property or you inherited a rental property and it's, and let's say it's in Cupertino.
Mm-hmm.
So we know most houses in Cupertino are ridiculously overpriced because Cupertino
schools
is what it is. And so let's say it's worth $2 million.
Okay.
It, actually, Ron's example, he had a lady that he helped that was actually in real estate. And so she owned a house in Cupertino, $2 million bucks. She's getting like $3,500 bucks a month rent on it. And she's like, what am I going to do? You know, it wasn't performing. The value of that investment was not, the returns weren't there.
Okay.
So then she wanted to retire. And as an agent or someone self-employed or independent contractor, you know, maybe her 401k and her other stuff wasn't up to speed like maybe someone else. So what she did was she took that $2 million asset, 1031 exchange it into 20 houses in Vegas. So what that did was it basically tripled her income, because now, maybe you have 20 houses in Vegas that are all worth, you know, $80,000 or something like that, but they're all getting $900 a month rent or $1,000 a month rent. So now her income on one property went from $3,500 to owning 20 properties, and now she's getting $12,000-$15,000 a month rent.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, she can use it as a little bit like poker chips, right? When she needs a little bit of money, she sells one of the houses. And then you don't pay as big of a hit where she would have paid a huge hit if she had sold that $2 million property. Now you sell one of the houses, you pocket some cash, you have to pay a little bit to the government, and you kind of use it as like, you know, you turn it in a couple poker chips here and there. So I love that strategy because it diversified her one asset into a lot of different assets and then made her income bigger.
Right.
You know, so I thought that was a really cool example. That's an example I always make Ron talk about whenever I'm at
a great one,
because it's awesome. And it's really for people that own valuable rental property, it could help them.
Yeah, I mean, this is really good. We've had these shows before. The bottom line is that when you purchase real estate, the great thing about it, you know, similar, not really similar to stock, honestly, it's different. It really is. We've talked about this before. We've talked about the example and the analogies before. But when you buy real estate, Mike kind of just gave you an example of the things you could do. I mean, you could be a primary residence.
Yeah.
Right? You can convert it to a rental property. You could convert it back if you want. You could use part of the assets to do some of the things to offset taxes, to delay taxes, a lot of different things. I'm not sure that there's another vehicle like that. And by the way, you have to live somewhere, and someone else has to live somewhere. So unless they, you know, eventually convert kind of space homes where everybody's floating around in the space living on, and, you know, not physical properties, the bottom line is people need a place to live. They need a place to rent.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's demand. And some of the examples you just gave, Mike, that's unique. And I don't know when I say this, But I'm not so sure you have the same flexibility and benefits in stock or owning a business and some other things, right? I mean, there's other benefits for sure.
Sure, yeah. They
but
all
these
have
are unique.
Yeah, they're unique. I mean, even one more is like I use myself an example. If I, on my taxes, I declare 10% of it for a home office.
Okay.
Okay. I can theoretically, if I ever sold my house and I declared that the same thing a few years in a row, I could exchange the value of that 10% into something else because it's an investment.
Right.
Or if you had an ADU on your property, same thing. On your primary residence, or you owned a duplex where you lived in one side and the other side was an investment.
Interesting.
And your taxes said that.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could exchange that part of it, you know. And let me just make this very clear. Consult your CPA.
Yeah,
right. I'm not giving out tax advice
today.
We're
not tax experts at all.
But I'm just giving this information out based on, you know, my expertise and my and knowing 1031 guys and whatever. But consult your CPA. Everyone's situation is different. What you do with your taxes and all that stuff, we're not going to do a radio show on or a podcast on.
Yeah.
But these are just some strategic things you can think about doing, you know. And then we even talked about out-of-state investing. We've done shows on that before. We can do a whole nother show on the positives and negatives of that and where people are buying and how you can use 1031 for that too. So there's all sorts of stuff. It's pretty exciting. You can tell I'm excited. It's a good topic.
Oh, it's a great topic.
And I learn something new every time I'm with Ron.
Yeah.
I don't know everything there is to know about exchanges, but that's why you and I, we build our partnerships up with people that are experts in certain things. You know?
It's about time we – I know we've talked about it before and everybody's so busy and me included, but we really should you know, we have this audience, right? I mean, thousands of people download this podcast every month. We have this audience that follows us. You have your clients. I have mine. I mean, over the years – we really should do one or two, you know, seminars a year.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right? Physical locations where we can market, get people in the room, have them answer questions. We could have you, myself, a CPA, a financial planner, that type of thing, just to really prepare people for this. And one of the things that came to mind when you said ADU, I wonder, and I'll get a CPA on and do a show because I'm kind of behind on that. I want to get a CPA on. It's been a while. But you wonder what kind of tax benefits. We know kind of you talked about 10% of your home or writing off a home office, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You wonder, is there anything different or unique a person could do with an ADU on their property as a business?
Yeah.
You know what I know? You know what I mean? I mean, I wonder.
I don't know. Yeah.
I just thought about that when you said that. I know people write off a percentage of their house and different things they could do if they use
probably
it for business.
That. Yeah, or invest. Yeah. No, I think they could.
ADU is your office. That'll be the next
topic.
There you
go. I like it.
Using ADU is your office.
I like it.
So the key really is 1031 is a great vehicle. It's a great use, but you can't exercise that. You can't benefit from it unless you own real estate. You know that we're advocates of owning real estate. It doesn't mean everybody has to, but what it does mean is, you know, 99% of the people that I've worked with, talked to, associated with, friends with, family, coworkers. Very rare do you find someone, it's true, very rare do you find with someone that says, oh my God, it was the stupidest thing I ever did was buy a house. I mean, I don't know, less than one half of 1% of people I've ever met or said that.
Mm-hmm.
Just because if you manage your finances properly and you, especially if it's a primary residence and you have to live somewhere anyway, we've talked about this, and you have your tax benefits, you have appreciation, and if you're patient, things don't happen overnight. It's just a great way to go. It really is. And so any way you could do it, we're in a time period right now. People are probably getting tired of hearing me say this, but I'm telling you, because we've been studying this stuff for so long, and Mike knows this too, it is a great time to buy right now. A lot of people are hesitating. A lot of people are – and I know why, but my guess is because, there might be a recession. Oh, the trade wars. Oh, the impeachment. Oh, this and oh, that. Oh, my foot, my toe, my ear, my whatever, right? I mean, I'm being a little funny, but the bottom line is try to put that crap aside and make decisions based on what's good for you, your family, your partnerships, whatever, because the government and all that other bullshit, that's just going to continue. They're going to be doing their thing. You have no control over that. Zero control over that.
Yeah.
When the reality is, so make decisions based on what's good for you. And the reason I bring this up is because I think right now, people could look back a few years from now and think, God, I wish I would have bought in this time period where you could actually make an offer, you could actually put contingency offers in, you could actually put some strategy. The buyers have some leverage now, right? I mean, it's been a while since we've seen that.
No, it has. I mean, we've been talking about
and
it.
These cycles repeat themselves.
Absolutely. And I just think it's a great time.
Yeah.
You know, it is. I mean, there's no – it's the bottom line. It's
yeah.
It's good and – it's going to be good for a while.
And the great thing about podcasts is we come back and throw that in your face.
Yeah, yeah. It's
that's
recorded.
What I love
it's
about
recorded,
radio
baby.
Podcasts. I can go back that's and go, right. Hey, you know what? Go back to October 2000 this and listen yeah. to this podcast. Anyway, I want to thank you again for tuning in. Those that are watching us on Facebook, we appreciate that very much. Do us a favor. Share the show. Hopefully you like it. Give us any feedback. We always love that too. If you have any information or any questions on real estate, contact Mike. What's the best way to reach you?
408-630-0101 or MikeDSells.com.
And most of you hopefully know how to reach me. RERadioLive.com is the website. And Joe at RERadioLive. And you can always reach, text, or call 408-838-9060. Thanks again for tuning in. Have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to Real Estate Radio Live. For more information on today's program, visit RERadioLive.com. That's RERadioLive.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Discover more at RERadioLive.com.